Hello and welcome to the Cycling Science Podcast, episode number 16, Cycling into Old Age. I'm your host, Professor Richard Davison. So in this episode, I'm interviewing Ray Marentet. I think I got that right. He'll correct me in a moment. And Ray is from the Royal Academy of Octogenarian Cyclists. So we'll talk about that in a moment. So firstly, welcome, Ray.
And thank you.
Could you just tell us a little bit about yourself? And we were just having a chat before we started recording there about your family name. And I wasn't sure where the origin was. So maybe you might have a bit of history about your name and your family origin.
Well, actually, I'm a 10th generation living in Canada from France. And our family left France in 1643, one of the historical families of the city of Montreal. And there's quite a history behind it. And his grandson left Montreal to settle in the Fort of Detroit, which is known now as Detroit, Michigan, the United States. And it's across from the river. The Detroit River is the city of Windsor, Ontario. Back in those days, the Fort of Detroit was a French fort. And the grandson of the original who came from France, Dominique Godard, he settled in the fort in 1720. In 1743, we crossed the river and chose Canada to be our home. Some of the Marentets stayed on the other side of the... Well, why did our name go from Godet to Marentet? Well, François was received the designation of Seigneur de Marats. Now, French names never end, it said. So they did is slap, put on a E-T-T-E on the end, and that's the originality of the name Marentet. So anyone in the world who has the name of Marentet would have come from the Fort of Detroit in 1720 into 1743 when we crossed over to the Canadian shore. That's a little bit of history of my family. Je parle français. Even after 10 generations living in an Anglophone province of Ontario, our family still speaks French, and we speak fluently in both languages. And sometimes people recognize that there may be a slight French accent in our English, but generally because we speak 90% of the time in English, where English is the predominant language of the province of Ontario. That's a little bit of my history. Back in 2000, three children were living in the Toronto area. So we took our little poodle dog and settled in the Toronto area. We've been here now for 21 years, and it's a mecca of cyclists. And that was one of the reasons why we love where we live so much. We're right on the shores of Lake Ontario, where there's cycling galore. Oh, cycling is a part of life in this area. We have trails going on all the way from Niagara Falls all the way down to beyond the city of Toronto, that cyclists take it every day. And there's a great Canadian trail where people cycle all the time. Now, back in 2018, I had to adhere to a request from my dear wife. She suggested that now at 81, I should not be cycling by myself, that it was too dangerous to cycle alone. So, being a person who sometimes thinks out of the box, I thought maybe I would invite people to join me. I was in a brand new neighborhood. I didn't know too many people around. So I posted signs on the bike trail, come and join me at the park at 7:30 next Thursday night. And lo and behold, on the first night, we had 14 people that showed up for a bike ride with me. 2 weeks later, more than doubled. We had up to 89 for one ride, just cycling for about an hour and a half, just a casual ride down the trail. This became a part of the community. And I called it the port credit slow roll because we're not like the going down main streets at 22 kilometers an hour. We probably average maybe 12 or 13 kilometers an hour. We go to the park, we socialize, we take pictures on the waterfront, and we just relax, and then we come back. Usually the ice cream truck is waiting for us when we get back. We sometimes have draws where we encourage the local businesses to provide prizes at the end of the rides. So this was back in 2018. The city of Mississauga recognized my involvement with cycling and awarded me an award, which is a Phil Green Award from Mississauga, of raising the bar on cycling in Mississauga. So since then, it's been a fun thing. Last year in 2020, we had to cancel all the rides. This year, we started it up again in June, and we had a number of rides, and we really were very successful. And so that's where it's all at the moment. But being 80 plus, I had never known a single person who was my age who cycled. And I was intrigued by the possibility that there were some others out there. So 2 years ago, later this month, I just out of a whim, thought I would start a Facebook group of cyclists over 80. And I wanted to give it a whimsical, kind of maybe silly name, just to create the, I didn't want to call it Cycling Over 80, like there's Cycling Over 60, Cycling Over 70, but I didn't want to give it a name like that. I wanted it to be original, and I wanted it to be a little bit out of the ordinary. So I called it the Royal Academy of Octogenarian Cyclists. And then within a week, I had 3 or 4, and 5 or 6. And before I knew, I had 20, 40, 50. And before the end of the year, I had 220. That was in December of 2020. Now we've come up to close to our second anniversary. As of this morning, we have 829 who are octogenarians, and 14 of them are nonagenarians. We don't have any centurions yet, but possibly next year. We have 2 and they're 99, so they may have centurions next year. But that's where it all is. But the group is extremely interesting. Extremely interesting because some of them are professionals. Some of them are like me, just enjoying a bike ride, who cycle all their lives. But the octogenarian group are not only speaking about cycling, they're speaking about their personal lives, their health issues, and the remembering all the incredible things in their life regarding the Tour de France and certain time trials that they participated in years ago. And now they're reconnecting with people that they haven't seen or heard of for 30, 40 years who they competed against. And it's very interesting to the dynamic enthusiasm that exists within the group. So that's basically where we are today with the Royal Academy of Octogenarian Cyclists.
That's great. Thank you. It's a brilliant sort of introduction. I just wanted to sort of go back a little bit and probe a little bit about you, sort of your own background. You say that you're just a recreational cyclist, so you've never raced or anything yourself. It's biking for the fun of biking. And you did, have you done that all your life? Or is that from a young kid?
Well, actually, at 9 years old, we moved from the city of Toronto, the city of Windsor, and we moved to a little community on the outskirts of Windsor called Tecumseh, named after Chief Tecumseh, who fought in the wars between the Americans and the Canadians and fought with the British against the Americans during those wars. But nevertheless, the little town of Tecumseh was, we were over a mile from school. And so my first experience of cycling was probably 10 months of the year, except when there was snow on the ground. For all through my elementary and high school years in the town of Tecumseh, which was over a mile away. So cycling to me was a daily way of getting, we didn't have school buses back in that era. And so we cycled to school. And it's really ironic. I used to park our bike across the street from the school, just out leaning up against a telephone pole or something like that. I've never had my bike stolen. It was unheard of. Nobody would steal bikes back there. And today you wouldn't dare leave your bike just sit there. It would be gone in minutes.
And of course, you know, I kind of think, or I often say as well, is that, you know, I'd like a little bit like you, although not cycling to school. I was introduced at a very young age. My father was a cyclist, a keen racer. But I think if you do get introduced to it at that stage, I consider it a little bit like a virus. It's actually very difficult to get rid of. You have that passion, and okay, there may be parts in your life where work gets in the way, family gets in the way, and you don't do as much as you have in the past, but it's very hard to not end up going back to it at some point and picking it up again. I think it's, I think there's a freedom, there's a, you know, as well as the physical enjoyment and the physical benefit that you get from it, that draws people back.
Well, actually, I had never been a big fan of Tour de France or any big cyclists other than knowing about Armstrong and maybe some of the other great cyclists from North America or wherever. This last 2 years has introduced me to a world of cycling that I had never known of. And it's been, like you just said, once you really get into it, it's very interesting, very stimulating, and you kind of keep digging. Once you get the urge to find more about people cycling and world tours, that is so incredible. Some people sell their homes, sell all their belongings, take their bikes with their wife and loaded it with panniers, and away they go first. And they do stories on it, they write books on it, they do movies on it. And it's just incredible how cycling is a world in itself.
Yeah. No, you know, some fantastic physical feats, you know. Mark Beaumont, who I'm sure you know of, who currently holds the record for round the world in less than 80 days, you know, is a friend of mine and has come and spoken at conferences that I've organized. And, you know, his first attempt was self-supported, and his 80-day attempt was fully supported. You know, there's a huge difference between the two. But, you know, to think of covering that amount of distance, even 80 days is an unbelievable feat, but in any duration, just to physically cycle around the world or any of these, you know, and there's a whole, in fact, I think there's been spawned a whole range of, events that are, you know, gravel events now that are becoming popular, and these off-road long distance events, you know, across Canada, across America, you know, they're becoming hugely popular. Like, it used to just be the one or two big events that you could name, you know, a couple in Europe. And of course, RAM across America has been on the go for a long time. But there seems to be more and more people that are sort of interested in that. But let me just take you back a little bit. You talked about some of your members in your academy. Coming from a racing background, so you know, you hinted at that you have people who rode the Tour de France. You've got some Tour de France riders in your group, and so you've got a group, some of them that were highly competitive, who are, you know, members of your. And is it very international? Therefore,
oh, very much so, but predominantly from England.
Okay.
That's the predominant numbers right now. We have. As of now, we have 144 from UK, and I don't know if I'm supposed to include Scotland as part of UK. I think it is, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Well, I have four from Scotland.
Okay.
So I have 144 plus 4 is 148. But for the longest time, the UK members of the Academy were in second place, the United States being number one when way over 300. Excuse me. And let me just grab a little. But what happened is that the group from Canada were way below. Then in July, CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, did an interview and sent one of their videographers and did a story about the Royal Academy. And we have now surpassed UK. We're at 186 versus 148. So we've taken second place as so far as the number of cyclists. But the cyclists from UK, a lot of them are now residing in two areas, Australia, New Zealand, and, well, actually the United States. So we've got, so some of these individuals were originally from UK who immigrated to these countries. And they speak about their experiences in rides within the UK over the years, and ill man and races and so forth. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting to see that the predominance of the people from UK have a real, real strong interest in cycling.
I just had an addition to that last question. You know, are you aware of many of your members who are still racing?
Yes, not racing, but they'll do time trials, and they do and what is known as Tour de Tucson, Arizona, and they have in various cities, and if they fall into the category of 80 plus, and then they always come on and show their medals. Well, of course, they're going to win a medal. They're only three or four. They each get the silver, the bronze, silver, and golds are obviously the three medals that are given out. So it's really interesting that there's still quite a large number of being competitive. We have, this is an incredible story. This one lady, we have 12% of our total are women of the 829, do the math. So it's about 92 or something like that of the total that are women. And this one gal from California was in a velodrome doing a time trial. She was going around and she was just finishing her time trial. She was coasting in. Of course, you know that there's no brakes on those bikes. And she was just coasting down. She was down to about maybe 15, 16 kilometers an hour. And one fellow came up behind her and didn't see her because his head was down. And he ran into her and put her in the hospital for 6 weeks. And she walked with crutches and walkers and so forth. And this was 6 months ago. She's now back on her bike. She's determined, 83 years old, determined that she was going to get back in competition. And she's back. She rehabilitated. She is rehabilitated and she's back on her cycling and she's back on the velodrome. Mind you, she is not up to her 100% yet, but she's working at it. That's the kind of determination that some of these individuals have, no matter how old they are. Age is not a factor here. People are asking me all the time, what's the difference between an 80-year-old cyclist and a 70-year-old cyclist and a 60-year-old cyclist? There's no difference. They have, because they maintain that level of health and enthusiasm and interest, it just goes on. And they keep going. Some of them claim that they're not quote, going quite as fast as they used to. Yeah. They're slowing down.
Yeah.
But that's to be expected. Yeah. But they don't, they're not quitting. They just keep going. And it's the only people that don't cycle that much is the people who are affected by by weather, like we are here in Ontario and most of Canada.
No, it's great. It's a lovely story about the, well, it wasn't nice that she would had an accident, but to hear that she's back on, competing again on the track. And I suppose the other takeaway message from that is, you know, the fact that she was so active and so fit and still competing was probably one of the reasons why she's able to get back to doing it, you know. So that ability to maintain function, and maintain your health is really important. While I know from the science side that you cannot stop aging, you can certainly minimize the impact of aging by keeping very active. And of course, cycling is one of those ones that that allows you to be very active. You know, it's got a low injury rate as long as you don't fall off or get hit. Mm-hmm. And it allows you to do that. And I also, you know, I think it was just last year that, I can't remember. I think it was David, his first name, David Marchand. He was the French chap who was...
Robert Marchand.
Robert Marchand. I couldn't remember his first name. I knew it was Marchand.
No, you had half of it right. That's okay.
He was, what, 107 when he died or thereabouts, but was still, trying to set records on the track and so on, and was determined, even at that age,
I think at 105 he was in a velodrome, set the record of the speed for his age. Of course, nobody else has ever come close to 105 doing a velodrome.
Right. But of course, he has all those records going back as well, you know. So there's a target, I suppose, for some of your members who are still competitive to see if can break some of those records. It was one of the questions I was going to ask you. So you beat me to it. You know, the proportion of women that's in your Royal Academy, and that's actually quite impressive, because as you've probably been aware, being a lifetime cyclist, you know, the participation rate of women is actually relatively low. It's getting better. You know, if I look now at the young kids competing, you know, we have a lot of young women that competing, and of course, there's a lot of fantastic role models for them now, in terms of, you know, the fact that at Olympic level, you know, there is an equal number of medals available for men and women, which wasn't always the case. And, you know, I suppose the Olympics is the pinnacle of achievement, which I suppose we still haven't got, equal parity necessarily for the women's Tour de France, but I think we're getting there slowly. So great to hear that you've got such a good, I think, considering the age group, because you've got such a good representation from women.
And not only representation, but their determination when they run into a problem like one of the Donna from Kelowna, BC, was diagnosed with cancer. And she had the operation, and now she's back on her bike, but not right at this month because of Clodagh being in the middle of winter as well as we are here in Ontario, but that in British Columbia, where they live, is kind of a tropical sometime, but they've run into, I don't know if you've heard in the news recently, but there have been some tremendous floods in that part of British Columbia. But the... in her case, she had a colostomy bag and permanent type of operation. And she's back on her bike after 3 months. And she's posting with a big smile and just carrying on as if nothing happened. And this is the kind of thing that kind of gives the spirit to those who are having difficulties, who may have run into some medical issues. And they sustain one another. We have one gal who had a stroke 2 months ago, and she's back on the site all the time, and she's posting how She's gone from bedridden to walker to cane, and now she's working on getting her right side rehabilitated. She wants to get back on her bike. But we also, I don't know if you plan on speaking about e-bikes and recumbent bikes and
I was just about to
come on. I don't want to steal your thunder here.
It was one of those things, you know, I suppose, but the question I had prepared was, you know, what does an 80 plus year old cyclist think of the current high-tech bikes, you know, fancy training programs, nutritional strategies? But, you know, I think you obviously mentioned one of the real pluses is the evolution of e-bikes and what that enables. I'd say ordinary cyclists, not just older cyclists, but, you know, more recreational cyclists to extend the range, et cetera. You know, I recall one story on one of my usual Sunday rides. And this is maybe 4 years ago. It's the very early days of e-bikes. But on this route, I go up through this village and it's a fairly significant uphill. But, you know, I can see in the distance where there's this bike that pulls out onto the road just in front of me. So I'm, you know, I can just about make them out, and I'm not catching them that fast. And I'm thinking, I tell you, it looks as if it's a mountain bike because I'm on a proper racing bike. And it looks like a mountain bike. In fact, it looks like he's got a puffer jacket on. I'm thinking, this guy, I tell you, he's gone some. And it wasn't till I got closer, I went, oh, yes, it's an e-bike, you know. So I did eventually go up beside him and chat to him. And of course, the story that he told me was that the e-bike was fantastic because it enabled him to extend the range of how far he would go. So he actually ended up doing more cycling as a result, because some people feel it's like cheating, that you're not putting in the effort.
Absolutely.
And of course, the research that's been done on this also points to the fact that people do not do less because they've got an e-bike. If anything, they do slightly more. So it's not cheating. So I'd love to hear, you know, your stories around, you know, e-bikes and what you think.
Well, there's the pros and cons. I had one fellow come on last week and say, if I have to get an e-bike, I'm quitting. I'm not going to cycle anymore if I have to depend on an e-bike. And others are saying, it's better to have an e-bike than not cycle at all. And some are saying, you think we're just riding around with the electrical power? No, we only use it when we get tired or we're climbing hills and our cardio is beyond where it should be. You get 120, 140 beats per minute, you should maybe turn on your e-bike and give it a chance to simmer down a little bit. So I don't have an e-bike. And at this stage of my life, I don't want one because I enjoy we're not in the hilly part at all. There's no mountains in Port Credit and Mississauga along the shoreline of Lake Ontario. But occasionally we have little hills to climb, and sure, my cardio goes up, but I enjoy it and I look forward to having a little bit of stimulus. But those who are in very hilly country would find an e-bike a real assistance in climbing those hills. Another thing that was happening, the older ones were cycling with the younger groups and they couldn't keep up with the group, and they decided to quit because they couldn't keep up and they felt less of a cyclist. So now they got an e-bike, they can keep up with the group and they're enjoying it like they ever did before. So there's a lot of pro, a lot of con. There's a lot of people consider it cheating. A lot of people really are opposed to it, but most of them are in favor of it. And I would say out of the 829, I probably, if I put an estimate on it, I would say probably 30% have e-bikes. Hmm. Yeah. I would think that would be a reasonable number. And so whether they're riding tandems or recumbents or standard bikes, most of them are, the older ones may be more have to have e-bikes when they're over 85, pushing 90, versus the ones who are just coming on board at 80.
Well, you know, I suppose the other, you know, there is continual development in bikes, and the new ones are really super light and, you know, carbon fiber everywhere and, you know, tubeless tires. But of course, they're very expensive. You know, what, you know, how, because the e-bikes are not cheap either. You know, a really top of the range road bike, you know, you can get a very good secondhand car for that sort of money, you know. So, you know, how does that, you know, contextualize, you know, compared to, say, when you were younger, bicycles were relatively cheap. What do you think of those developments in terms of the prices and the equipment? And
I can't believe the price of a recumbent bike, whether it be a trike or a two-wheel recumbent. Those bicycles are in the thousands. They're very expensive.
Yeah. And of course, the other thing then is, you know, these days we can, well, you were talking about heart rate, you know, it's easy to monitor heart rate. We can measure power. We have all these nutritional products. Does any of your members, you know, use these on a regular basis? But maybe you just stop at a cafe and you say, get something nice to eat, a nice coffee and a bun.
Well, the recumbent bikes are another world all by themselves. And they're a very specialized group. And especially the ones who are in the two-wheel recumbents, they're a little bit rare rather than the trike recumbents. And I don't know if you see too many in England, but there seem to be a number of them throughout the Royal Academy. Recently, I have a feature fellow. We don't call them members. We call them fellows who are part of a fellowship, just to not use the word member. You don't join the Academy. You become a fellow within the fellowship of the Academy. So the thing is with these recumbent bikes, is that people buy them, try to use them, and they can't get the niche of them, and they give it up. Then they go back to their regular bikes. It's really interesting that it takes a lot of skill to ride a recumbent. It's very different than riding a regular bike. I've never done it, but I'm based on what I hear.
Oh, a two-wheel recumbent, yeah, that's difficult. And I do have some personal experience of a three-wheel recumbent. You know, unfortunately, I said at the beginning, my father introduced me to cycling. Unfortunately, he had a cycling accident and ended up breaking his back as a result. So he's in a wheelchair now. But he has a three-wheeler hand bike, which is also an e-bike as well, so it does have a motor. So he goes out with the cycling club that he used to always go out with, and when it's, you know, on a flat or slightly downhill, he would struggle to keep up. You know, as you know, e-bikes have a speed restriction, so there's a limit. Even though he's modified it and increased the chain wheel size, etc., there's still a difficult to keep up. But if it's a slight uphill and then he can start to use his motor, then he can start to hurt his clubmates that he used to. So he can keep up and even push them a little bit, you know. So again, the technology is, you know, it's great to be able to, particularly for a hand bike, because, you know, obviously using your hands and your arms is nowhere near as powerful as using your legs. So, you know, that is a challenge to keep up.
Well, some of the recumbent owners find it difficult to get out of their recumbent once they're in it. It takes an effort to get off the bike. You can get into it a lot easier than getting off of it. And so you have to have strong arms to be able to push yourself out of it. And you'll find it very difficult to have people. It would take a couple of people to lift you out of your incumbent bike otherwise. So that in itself is a disadvantage of the incumbent bikes. You have to stay really under a certain weight. If you get overweight, you're locked into your bike once you sit down, because you'll find it very difficult to get out unless you have very strong arms and you can push yourself out.
So Ray, you've obviously, as you say, you've developed this community of over 800 cyclists, older cyclists, over 80 across the globe. So, first of all, fantastic, great work. What are your sort of ambitions for, that fellowship? You know, what do you see that there's any events or anything that you're aiming to try and do, or is it just the opportunity just for, a central point to be able to connect?
Well, we didn't have initially 2 years ago. I had no aspiration. I had no idea what this was going to run into. It has evolved over a period of 2 years. It has evolved two or three times. Okay, initially we were very, if you didn't tell me you were over 80, you couldn't get in. But if you said yes, I let you in before, but now I insist on a date of birth. I don't need proof of it, but they have to tell me. And there are a number out of the 829, probably maybe 30, who haven't told me the real age. But I would say that the great majority are over 80. And what are my aspirations? Well, I really am really just absolutely astounded by the results of this. And one of the biggest thing is we're going through a pandemic and it's still not over. In fact, we're into the fourth and sometime the fifth wave. And a lot of people are being affected by this, especially the older people. For myself, what has it done for me? Well, it has deprived me of doing yoga and swimming and belonging to the health club like I did previously. And I have to force myself to do my yoga moves on my own and within my residence. And I really miss that, miss it big time. But what it has done for hundreds of our octogenarians is giving them an opportunity to forget about the pandemic and enjoy something that they enjoyed for many years of their life. So I am just really proud of the fact that I did something without even planning or knowledge what was going to happen. And it has developed into a world of its own. And where is it going to go from here? I don't know. Hopefully, when I'm gone and no more the administrator of this group, I have chosen two other individuals to take over that are younger than I, who are very enthusiastic, to carry it on. And the Royal Academy of Octogenarian Cyclists loves their social media. Hopefully it'll live on forever, because now it's there and some love the name, and most of the people love the name, but some people find Royal, why Royal? And Royal is simply a title to bring it up to a different level. And why the Academy? Because it just rhymes with Royal and it kind of fits in. An achievement of a level. Academy is an achievement kind of thing. And of course, the octogenarian cyclist, it's natural. So people are questioning why I chose the Royal Royal, and some of the individuals and would say, well, maybe certain individuals of other parts of Ireland may not be willing to be a part of it. Well, this morning I had somebody from Dublin who just joined the group. So maybe the name Royal is not so bad after all, as far as the Irish are concerned. So it's an interesting thing. You have to read. I read everybody's notations. I must spend hours reading because I ensure that there's no politics. Absolutely no politics, especially from the Americans. And they have a tendency to kind of slip once in a while. And I have to keep them in line because you don't want to get involved in politics, especially with the previous president. It was a very, and another thing that we kind of stayed away from is whether or not vaccinations of COVID-19 is good or bad. We stay away from the, but I would say that I haven't met a single person who is part of our group who is an anti-vaxxer. So that's very positive.
So I think it's a great achievement, and I can appreciate the value that many of your community have been able to benefit from, particularly as you say at this time. I'm only in my mid 50s. I've got a little bit of time to go before I get to be able to be officially allowed into your fellowship. Absolutely fantastic work, Ray. And, as I know we've discussed, be nice to do some research just to find out a little bit more about the group. I'm obviously, as I'm very interested in cycling. I'm very interested in health and fitness and how cycling is a mode of exercise that people can adopt for the vast majority of their life. There shouldn't really be much reason for people not to cycle. So we're trying to encourage more people.
You mentioned whether or not we had any future plans to maybe have a worldwide gathering of the octogenarians. That would be fantastic if we didn't have COVID. And once things settle down, just in the Toronto area here, we have 38. So I plan on getting a group together, and who knows, we might even get into the Guinness Royal Book of Records of the greatest accumulative gathering of octogenarian cyclists at one time in the year. And if we don't do it locally, maybe we can entice all the cyclists who are part of the group to get out and cycle at the same time, worldwide at various times, and be able to set a record, world record, of octogenarian cycling all at the same time across the world. So those are little plans that I have in the future. Whether they will develop or not, it's time will tell, but that's what's in behind my mind here in the future of our group.
Sounds great. I'm just going to sort of finish off by saying, thanks very much, Ray. I've certainly enjoyed your discussion and hearing the great work that you're doing. So please keep it up.
Thank you. It's my pleasure giving me the opportunity to tell you about our Royal Academy of Octogenarian Cyclists. And it's been a pleasure for me to speak to you, and you're welcome to communicate with me at any time in the future. Nice meeting you, Richard.
Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed the interview. Apologies it's taken me so long to actually publish this interview. Too many other commitments, including taking part in the Haute Route Pyrenees, which is an extended story in itself, which may be part of a forthcoming YouTube video and obviously podcast. Of course, I need to thank Ray for the interview. And since we've actually completed the interview, the Academy has now grown to over 1,100 members. So going from strength to strength. I need to recognise my employers, the University of West of Scotland. And if you'd like to find out a bit more about the courses we offer and the research that we do, then please visit our website, uws.ac.uk. Remember, if you've got any questions you'd like us to answer in a future show, then please contact us through our website. That's cycling-science.com. Also, if you would like professional advice or coaching from me personally, then please also use the contact page on our website or even through our Facebook page. Until next time, thanks for listening. And remember, good scientists and coaches always look for quality evidence to underpin their work. So never just accept what you read or hear. Seek quality sources to inform your training and racing. Thank you.